Why are businesses like HelloVet choosing Apple products and services?
So we started the business 2 years ago. We had a few people who were used to PCs, and this was their first foray into Macs. But it's been super smooth getting everyone onto those devices, and everyone seems really, really happy.
Find out how Mac can help you run and grow your business at apple.co/HelloVet.
Do you ever try to sit still and you can't seem to sit still for longer than 2 seconds before you want to move around? If so, this episode is for you. Today's guest is Phyllis Coletta. She's the founder, the writer of How to Be a Good Dog. And she is back here today to talk about the command stay. Now, this is a command that we give to our dogs, but today we're talking about it in the context of cueing our minds to stay. So we're going to be talking about how to build consistency as we learn this beautiful command that so many of us struggle with. I just want to say thank you to Dr. Bradley Nelson and iHeartRadio for your sponsorship. And to our audience, please do not forget to like and subscribe before you leave today. It's really great to have you back, Phyllis. I know we're going through all these animal commands, these dog commands, and today we're talking about stay. Last time we talked about sit. Today we're talking about stay. So I sense that we're building on these habits here.
Yeah, we are. You know, I mean, it's the book is How to Be a Good Dog, Learning to Sit, Stay, and Heal. And we want to get to that H-E-A-L. And the best way, it's kind of like the fast track, is treating your mind like a puppy. And we talked about how, you know, you have to do that with love and consistency and discipline. So yeah, last time we talked, it was sit. And that's the first thing we teach puppies, to try to contain them. And that's the first thing we need to learn as humans when we learn to meditate.
Yeah. So is stay one of the hardest cues?
Oh, absolutely. I think it was for me the hardest. So it's sit, stay, leave it. Those are the three cues that the book focuses on mostly, right? And, you know, getting a dog to sit, we talked about last week, it's not that difficult. They eventually all learn. But do you notice how many dogs don't know how to stay? Because it's a hard skill to teach. And it's a hard thing to learn, especially like I was like just born one of those humans that has so much energy that I can't sit still. It's very good, joyous. Like there's two sides to having that level of energy, right? It's great.
Totally.
And it's very annoying because I can't sit still. So for me, you know, it was really, really hard. And nobody really prepared me for that. But, you know, it's kind of like when I was pregnant, you know, nobody really told me how much it was going to hurt. Like nobody was straight with me. Now, this was back decades ago, right? So hopefully women now are better prepared for what you're up against. And I want to provide that same thing for meditation, that it is not easy, but it is so worth it. I guess just like childbirth, right? So,
yeah, totally. It's so worth it. Hard things take time to learn, and practicing makes us better at them. So by staying, what do you mean by that? Staying is to be able to stay in meditation?
Yeah, or just literally stay in your seat. So there's a difference, you know, because you could be crawling out of your skin, right? Which I did. I can't even tell you how many times once I really started down the path. You know, there was this, like, I used to try seminars and retreats and workshops, like in group settings. And it's terrible in group settings, Lisa, because like you have to stay. You can't just get up and leave. Like it almost feels like your freedom's being restricted, you know, and it's very aversive and hard for people. For me, it was extremely it's really hard.
Now that you say that, I'm thinking about like being in a conference and being in the center of a row and feeling like, or even on an airplane, that's where that hits hard, is like, oh my God, I have to be here for like 3 hours or however long the flight is. Yeah, that really hits home.
Yeah, you want to get up and go. I remember going to this six day silent retreat. It was called Rahatsu. You know, at a monastery, and fortunately all of the little monk rooms were taken. You had to stay right for 6 days at the place, and it was silent even through meals and everything else. So I was so lucky that there was no room on campus, because I got this little motel, and every day I would escape the monastery and like go buy Doritos and go to the motel and just sit there and watch Real Housewives. Like, I was so happy to be away from all that silence and all those people sitting straight and being quiet. Like, it drove me nuts. And I engaged in all these unconscious things we do to keep ourselves to address our anxiety, like Doritos and TV. So it wasn't a great like habit builder. I made it through the 6 days, but it was very hard. The stay was a real hard one. So,
Wow. Why do you think it's so hard?
well, I think it's harder than ever because of the digital world we live in. And it's also a cultural thing. Like in Europe, especially in Italy, where my family is from, they don't have a hard time staying. They don't work that hard. That's a culture that doesn't invest in physical stuff and consuming and money. Like they like food, they like to sit outside. It's a whole different world. So I think though in the US culture, we talked about it last time. It's like don't just sit there, do something. And what
Right.
meditation is don't just do something, sit there. So it's completely contrary to the way we're raised. Like, as a parent, you're always like, get off the couch, go do something. What are you doing? Like, we don't even let people stay, even when they're not meditating.
Right.
We think they're lazy. But to stay and then try to work the mind thing, it's really like it's a hero's journey. But people can do it. If you can start and embed the habit, you can do it.
Tell us about your experience. How did you learn how to stay?
Oh gosh. Well, it helps with humans. We like to know why we're doing something, right? So I think I had talked an episode or so ago about like how unraveled my life had become by 42, twice divorced. I had married two guys with alcohol issues. Like I was the codependent of century. My kids were heading into middle school, and that's when the wheels were falling off. So my motivation to learn this skill was to save myself, really. There comes a point where you have to get sick of your own bullshit, and I hit that point. And also, my kids, I could feel like I have three boys, and I was like so like triggered all the time. Like I had this anger reaction about everything, knee-jerk anger, yelling, screaming, which is also Italian and very Philly. So there's a lot of cultural stuff going on as well. But I could feel them retreating from me to learn to stay away from me, to stop telling me things because they were afraid of what I. So when I saw that I was losing, I don't mean to be dramatic. They love me, I love them, but I felt like I was losing them. And that's the highest stakes in the world. So like I'm at the age of 42 or something, I'm like, okay, it's booze or Buddhism. That was my mantra. And I'm not a drinker. Like I get a headache. So I had to figure out what to do. And my older sister, who also had the hair trigger temper that we all grew up with around kind of raging parents, she seemed to be happier and she was calming down. So I was like, I want to be like her. So that was my motivation. And I learned to stay because I had to. I knew I had to figure out a way to change myself so that I wouldn't lose my connection with my kids. That was the most important thing. I didn't want to be reactive anymore. And that's how puppies can be too, right? You don't want your dog to be reactive. They can respond to you, but you don't want them reacting with aggression or rage or in something that's going to hurt them or somebody else. We're the same way. We're reactive. We don't respond, we react. So I needed to fix that. That's
I'm picturing like the dogs who don't stay when you open the door, and then they just bolt outside, and then you can't control them. Like the brain, it just wants, it has a mind of its own. A brain is meant to think about a million different things. Like that's what a brain does. But it can be trained, just like that dog who runs out the door every time you open the door. Like, how frustrating is that?
Oh yeah, exactly. I mean, and think about it, like, or an owner that has an untrained dog, they might be able to sit, but they don't listen to other commands like stay. You knock on the door, you ring the doorbell. It sounds like a rodeo. Like they go crazy. They're barking already. You're scared. They're worried about their dog. It's not going to be a fun visit because you have an untrained puppy or dog at the center of it. And then you go even in the house, and everybody's worried about the dog. Oh, stay away. It just makes life so difficult when your puppy isn't trained and when your mind isn't trained. Because what we're trying to do is create focused attention. If you teach a dog to stay, right, then that dog is like locked in with you. You notice they look at you like, when are you going to let me go?
Totally.
So
Yeah.
it's training your mind for focused attention, which is a beautiful skill to have. And we're not talking about focusing on scrolling and all that other stuff. This is a completely a much higher level of focused attention. So you're trying to train the dog to be able to stop and stay, and yourself to what I call the power of the pause, to just stop and not respond immediately. Like when I used to go to Al-Anon, I had a wonderful sponsor. Her name was Ruthie, and I was complaining about, I don't know, my husband was doing something and he wanted an answer right away. And I always like responded immediately. If anybody asked me something, I responded right away. That's just the way I was at like this high level anxiety. And she said, Phyllis, like, why can't you just say, hey, I'll get back to you? Like, I don't know right now. Can I think about that? I never even knew that was a possibility. That never occurred to me that I could just stop and tell anybody politely, civilly, I'll get back to you. I don't know. I have to think about it. That was a game changer. That was a game changer for me. And that was in my era of trying to learn to control my mind. Now I do that all the time. I mean, I do that easily and all the time. When somebody has a sense of urgency around me, I have to just like, I'll let you know. Like, just give me a little bit of time, and then I do think things over. So it's such a valuable skill. The things we do when we're sitting and we're meditating, the whole point is when you're up walking around in your life, you're employing these same things, right? You're doing the same things. You don't sometimes though. You get up from a wonderful meditation session and your ex calls or something, and you're like, wow, you start all over. So, but that's okay. Like, we have to keep training. Consistency, discipline, the same things you would do with a dog is what you need to do with yourself. So,
Yeah, and I almost feel like the better that we get at training ourselves to prioritize our own sanity in a sense, like to take that moment. Because other people, when you stand up and you have boundaries, suddenly they're going to test those boundaries. Like, for instance, people automatically, when they send a text, like they expect a message back immediately. And you can see if someone's read your message. And so, like, people get so bent out of shape if you don't respond right away, or if you've read their message but you haven't responded. And if I wake up and I see a message and I don't respond to it, it's not because I'm playing games. It's because I don't know how to answer yet. So it's like I'm gonna get back to it. But our society is so like bent out of shape and so sensitive now on all these like trigger responses and how to respond and when to respond and what not to do. It's exhausting.
It is exhausting. And it's like, as we talked about before, it's built into the apps and the phones that the neuroscientists of Silicon Valley definitely did it all on purpose to keep those pings, like it gets right into our amygdala. We think we jump, we need to do right now. They won't let their own kids use the tech because they built it to addict us to it, and we are completely addicted. So what we're really doing in learning to meditate, we are stepping into recovery essentially from addiction, from because we now rely on external stuff for everything. We even rely on other people to tell us what to think, how to be. Like, we have forgotten our own authority because we never have enough peace and quiet. You don't even know who you are until you sit quietly for a while without distraction. You don't even know who you are. But once you get the hang of it, you have this whole well of inner wisdom that you've never accessed because you're always answering texts and listening to other people and trying to, get thin or fat or eat or not. Like, we're always on the hamster wheel. We miss the whole deal. Like, we have every problem you have in your life, you already have the answer in you, not in some expert. And so, if you give it space and time and quiet, you'll fix it. You'll fix your own problem. You don't need to rely on anybody else. So stay is so important. It's like marinating. That's the way I look at it, you know. You just gotta feel it to heal it. You have to stay in the quiet, and whatever comes up, it's gotta let it in and out. And you know, eventually it's really interesting because you'll see that, like, you know, the noise, the constant voice out of the day. Well, what are you doing? Why are you sitting there? Get up, you know, the electric bill, whatever it is that's going on in there. There's a little gap between those thoughts. And you learn to like recognize that tiny little quiet between thoughts. And you just want to make that get bigger and bigger and bigger. You want to hang out in the gap. And that helps with the staying too. Because when you sit, the circus starts up there right away. And nobody told me this stuff, you know, because they were all, I don't mean to denigrate the teaching industry around this, but it was all so lofty. Like they couldn't just tell me, like, your mind is a shit show. Nobody just said it's going to be nuts in there. And we were all just relegated to our own little nut craziness when we're trying to meditate. But eventually, I learned that it doesn't have to be that way. It is crazy. And there is a little space, even in everybody's nonstop chatter, that where you can breathe for a minute. And then eventually, you'll realize that voice is crazy. Why am I listening to that voice? That's what stay does. You stop listening to that tyrant. It's a tyrant in your head. And you can stop paying attention to it when you sit and stay.
Yeah, we are not our minds.
We are not our minds, but we think we are, and we're following. It's like a dog that's, or a human that's being dragged around by a dog that's untrained on a leash. They're pulling you around. That's what we allow our thoughts and our emotions to do. We allow our thoughts and emotions to drag us all over the place instead of, and this is part of the healing, HEEL, have learning to have these things walk beside us. But you don't even get to that point. We're just all being pulled around and we don't even know it. Mind training, you don't even have to call it meditation. You're mind training. Because, you know, sometimes meditation is loaded, like with religious or spiritual stuff that people find traumatic or unappealing. But honestly, we'll call it meditation or a stillness practice or whatever, but it's training your mind. It's your most valuable asset. And we just let it roam. So it's really a worthwhile practice, you know, and but it's really hard. The stay was, I think, the hardest thing for me because, like I said, it would make me want to just crawl out of my skin. And that's when you don't, you know, if you have a digital device, you grab that and then you start. Whenever you allow yourself a minute of silence, it's only probably 10 seconds before you pick something up. A book, you know, the remote, your whatever. Try to call somebody, get engaged in the conversation. Like, it's kind of fun to see how long you can actually stay in quiet. It might only be 30 seconds. And then you just have to, this is the part where, like, you got to be a ninja. You have to like be a Jedi warrior and stay. But again, not for more than at first 2 minutes, 5 minutes. We don't teach a dog everything all at once. It's too overwhelming. And your mind has been in control of you since whatever, probably when you were 8 or 9. Before that, you're just a free spirit, right? As a little kid. But so we have to teach the mind who's the alpha. I'm the alpha of my mind. I don't listen to this nonsense that goes on in there anymore. So it's a wonderful skill. It's so valuable. That's why I really like everybody to kind of commit to sit, to change the whirling chaos, you know, of your life, your family, your neighborhood, the world.
Commit to sitting and staying.
Sitting and staying. Yeah. So
Yeah. So I know for me, when I first started meditating, it was so difficult. And I actually started like leaving my phone in a drawer. I put it in a lockbox, took the key. Like I went through great measures to remove any distractions. And I remember this one time, I was doing something. I was working with the jail. I was running a program with the jail, and I had to go visit the local jail one day, and you can't take a cell phone in there. And for some reason, it was so powerful. I felt so good. Like it was like, oh, I can't have my phone with me. Wow, it's like felt like such a relief to me to not have it near me. And that was such an eye-opening day for me. It was like, why did I feel so relieved that my cell phone wasn't with me? And it just made me like think about that on a deep, deep level. And it was because I was not obligated to respond to anyone because I physically couldn't. Like, there was nothing I could do about it. But it was like, that's my mind telling me that. So when I started putting my phone away on my own and not feeling guilty about it, then that feeling returned. Because I think we feel guilty. We put this like unrealistic belief on ourselves that we have to respond to all the emails right away. We have to get back to everybody, or else what? Like, what's the concept? What really is going to happen if we don't respond to someone right away, or if we don't check our messages? Like, I don't know. Our minds, like you said, take us down this rabbit hole, and staying helps us get out of that hole.
Right. And you know what? It's this culture of busyness. It's so frustrating. Everybody is so busy, and it's 90% of it is nonsense. You know what I mean? Like, you don't need to do any of that stuff right away. But some people find busyness a great way to just stay distracted, so they don't have to look at themselves. So they just pile on the, they have lists and binders and this and that, and all this control that they want to assert over everything and everybody to keep them moving, 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 moving. I'm so busy. It's like a badge of honor. And like I said, folks in Europe, they think we're crazy. Like, what are you guys doing? Why are you so busy all the time? It's
Yeah.
very much a cultural thing. There are other countries as well, like in Japan. God, their culture of busyness is literally killing people. But in this country, it's just like assumed that's the way you have to be. And no, you don't. Like, we do have agency and autonomy over our bodies and minds. Well, our bodies, sometimes not by government or whatever, but over our minds for sure. That's a place nobody can take that away from you. So we need to learn to accept that agency and autonomy and train the mind, But
How do
that's
we
so
start?
interesting.
How
How do
do
we
we
start?
start?
You remember the training rules, right? Not too much too fast, not for too long, and always with love. So we talked about sitting, and in a way you want to just kind of build a crate, a place. Dogs love their crates. Most of them find it very comforting. And sometimes you just leave the door open, they go in there voluntarily. If it's a good home, you build yourself a little meditation crate, so to speak, like a space where you're already, as you walk in there, thinking, okay, I turned off my device. The kids aren't here. The phone's off. I have 5 minutes. So already your mind is like, you talk yourself as if you were like an athlete going into a game. You're starting to talk yourself into the focus of what you're going to do. And you always have to remember the reward. Like puppies you train, they're pretty easy because they just want a biscuit. They just want a treat. So, like for humans, we got to risk it for the biscuit too. You know what I mean? We have to remember the reward. It's not Doritos like I did to myself during that, meditation retreat, but it's peace of mind. I swear it's going to happen. If you do this, you will change. If you commit to this, the drama in your life will be cut in half, because you're going to find you're creating the drama. Because guess what? It keeps you busy, and it keeps your mind off the fact that you're so deeply unhappy, or that you're suffering at some very deep level that you're afraid to look at. So we do all these things to distract us from taking that kind of care for ourselves, We even like go to a spa, or we think it's a pedicure or whatever. No, the best way you can take care of yourself, first and foremost, is a lot of ways, but is to train your mind, because then your whole life improves after that. So start small. Love and patience with yourself. My three standard tips for stay are, number one, like, once you know that you're in a loving space, you're not going to try too hard. The timer's only on 5 minutes. You're in airplane mode. Everybody's out of your face. Put on the timer, and then this like cacophony of noise is going, it's going to start right, almost right away. It's going to start. I'm not comfortable. This hurts. Why am I doing this? You know, all the noise, the cha 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 cha. My chihuahua is what I would call it. But know that, like, when a dog is a little out of control and the energy is all over the place, you give it like a chew toy, right? They love that. Give it something to chew on, and it calms them down. So the breath is like your chew toy. Okay, so when your mind starts, it's the noise. Just use the breath like you would a toy. It kind of gives your mind something to do. Okay, I got to take a breath in. I got to take a breath out. Like it actually does stop the noise because you gave the mind something to do. Because as humans, our minds really want stuff to do, you know? So telling them you're not going to do anything is not going to work. Or trying to stop thoughts. You can't stop thinking. Maybe when you're asleep, that's about it. So don't even set goals around that. But so you give the breath a chew toy when you need it. I'm sorry, you give yourself a chew toy. The breath is that. Also, I would say what helped me to stay was like to start listening to this kind of shite show that was going on up there. It's fascinating. You get to know your mind. Listen to it. Enjoy it. It's a sitcom or a sci-fi or a horror show. It's like watching a movie. The stuff that your mind will create to get you to move, because that's the ego, just like doesn't want you necessarily to have peace of mind. And then I would say, so that's like the breath is a chew toy. Enjoy the show. You might as well, because it's your mind, and eventually it won't dominate you. And then mind that gap between the thoughts. Like hang out and stay and listen a little bit to that silence. Believe me, there is a space. It might only be a microsecond, but between all of the noise and the talking in your head, just hang out in that gap for a second. And, you know, do it all with love. Don't ever berate yourself or feel you can't do it, because you can. Everybody can do this.
Thank you so much. Tell us about your book and where people can find it.
My book is How to Be a Good Dog at howtobeagooddog.com. So the website's the best place to buy it because there's lots of other information on there, and you can just click the click the button. Also, today I have like I created this little chart of all the different kinds of dogs. I think one of the exercises, even before you start to sit, is to figure out what breed your mind is, you know, and what are the characteristics of the kind of dog you are. Or, you know, it's often the kind of dog you have is the kind of dog your mind relates to really well. You know, whether it's high energy, there's working dogs and herding dogs and sporting dogs. And there's even a group called toy dogs, like the little tiny chihuahua.
Yes.
That's what I was. They're bred for companionship, basically. So, in the show notes, there'll be a little link to the chart to start thinking about, like, what is my mind like actually right now? And there might be a dog that you are now, a breed, and you might have a dog, like a breed you want to aspire to. Like I was a Chihuahua. I just assumed that's what it was and I could never change it. But my favorite dog was always a black lab. That's always what I had. And that's what I feel like I've become. Like I'm a black lab, like trapped in the body of an old white lady, you know? So now I'm a black lab. So, you know, go to the website, contact me either through the contact form, you'll get a free chapter, or just email me at phyllis@howtobeagooddog.com. Tell me what the breed is, because I'm so fascinated by that. What did you say, Lisa? You have a Shih Tzu, do you?
No, I do not. Stacy has Shih Tzus. I have a
Stacy,
cat, but
that's
I
right.
used to have a Boston Terrier French Bulldog, and I was very much like that crazy intelligent animal. And now I feel like I'm more like a golden retriever.
Oh, so nice. I love the Goldens. That's so nice. So, what changed?
Yes.
How did that happen? How did you transform your breed?
Tons and tons of work, decade of meditation and stillness and practicing. It literally took a decade.
Yeah. Oh, sure. It took me several decades. You're lucky it
But
happened.
every single day we move the needle just a little bit. The more we do it, the easier it gets. And you don't feel like you're making progress. And some days you actually feel worse than others, but every single day you do it, you move the needle a little bit.
You do. And then eventually you'll get the feeling of like relaxing. And for me, that was foreign. I didn't even know what it was. I was like, what is that? I was wound so tight all the time. So you will see those little things start to happen, you know. And then the universe,
Glimmers.
it glimmers, and you know, if you don't get it, like, the universe will push you along now and then with something. If you're on the right path, but you're not quite there yet, you know. It's like when I had a brain bleed a couple years ago, the doctor was my brain surgeon was like, okay, for 8 weeks your brain is going to be a little swollen. It was a occipital lobe, so my vision was weird, and I lost my job and stuff. All that happened, but it was all good, actually. But I couldn't exercise or read, and those are the two things that consume me. I love to do both. I love to be outside running, biking, hiking, skiing, and I couldn't do any of it. And I couldn't read because my eyes were kind of screwed up. But there was a lot at stake. It was my brain. So I said, like, all right, Phil, you're just going to have to sit around and kind of be quiet. I got noise-canceling headphones. I started listening to things. Like, that's a sense. I'd kind of ignored my sense of hearing. I just didn't pay attention to it until I couldn't, you know, run or read. And then I started listening. So it turned out to be amazing. But it really taught me how to stay. So we don't want to have those kind of reminders, right? But that's the only way I learn. I'm so stubborn. I'm sure it's just all, you know, the way I don't go easily. So, but I'm
Yeah, no,
grateful.
I think a lot of people can relate to a traumatic situation having to happen before they make actual life changes. So many of us tolerate life as it is because of fear of change, I guess. And it takes those events for most of us in order to awaken us to the better path.
Right. Yeah. You don't want to wait until things completely fall apart, but sometimes that's what it takes. But if you have the inkling, and don't be afraid of change. I love change. I seek it out, which is a little weird. That's kind of the opposite of what most people do, right? I don't like a status quo. So change doesn't bowl me over and I seek it. But with this kind of change that was hard for me to do, to train my mind, I was so used to just bulldozing my way through life, right? So it took a lot. And I'm happy. It's ongoing. It still happens. You know, it's a process, not perfection.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much for being here and for encouraging us to stay and sit and be with ourselves. And I agree, change is fun. Every time I go to a yoga class, I pick a different spot, and everybody always has their specific spots, and I'm always going somewhere different to try
Right.
something new, even parking spots. We get so into these mundane routines that we don't even think anymore. And there's so much power in switching it up. I find it so fun.
I love that. Parking spaces and yoga mats. I love that. It's the little things, right? And that's part of the mind training, that you're aware that if you change your perspective, everything can change. And so just moving your mat, you see different things. It's great. It's awesome. I love that.
Yes. Well, thank you so much for being here and for sharing your knowledge. We'll have your chart in the show notes so people can check out what kind of dog they are and the link to your book as well. So thanks again for being here. I look forward to next episode. What's the next
Oh, this is
command?
good. This is a good one. Next, we're going to do leave it. Leave it. That's the really hard one. People say to me all the time,
Ooh.
this, I can't stop that thought, one particular thing or a bad thing or a resentment. We are going to learn to leave it next time. So that's fun.
Beautiful. Looking forward to it. And I'm sure our audience is too. Please do not forget to like and subscribe before you leave today. And yeah, think about it. What kind of dog are you? What kind of dog do you aspire to be one day? Until next time, take care, everyone.